Blog Talk Radio.
There's some dangerous large carnivore out there.
And I saw that bird get a young deer off the road and fly away.
And it was just about getting dark, and we started panicking, running down the bridge, not really having any clue what was throwing rocks in our vicinity, good-sized rocks. And I stopped long enough to get a 357 out of my backpack and look back, and that's when I saw it. I saw one.
For a week, the town of Defiance was being harassed by a werewolf. And it's actually attacked two railroad workers, killed livestock. You know, just a lot of weird stuff that was going on.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Monster X Radio. Sunday, September 7th, 2014. Johnny Bigfoot here with me tonight. It's my co-host, Sasquatch Coffee founder Gunnar Monson and Crystal. Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Johnny.
Well, let's dig into some Bigfoot news, and then we'll welcome our guests. Maybe first of all, Gunnar could tell us about his recent escapades into Bluff Creek.
Yeah, well, I went to the Bigfoot Days event in Willow Creek and got a chance to finally meet J.M. Bailey that wrote to Eve. And she that weekend they released the short of Eve. The thing was up for, I don't know, maybe 3 days or so. And I don't know, I hope everybody got a chance to check it out. Then Steve Stroyford, that has Bigfoot books, he's pals with JM. So he stopped by the booth and proceeded to drill me about where SOA, Matt Johnson's "quote unquote" habituation site. So I was not forthcoming. So, talk to Jay if you're listening, and your secret's safe with me. It'll go to the grave. Unless there's a large check involved, I can't. Then I'm not so sure. I might, you know, or bamboo under the fingernails. So I got to hang out with Steven and JM, and then my friend Jess went with me down to Bigfoot Day. So we met up with Jamie, and I forget Jamie's last name. And Steven and Jamie are part of the Bluff Creek Project. So they all went down there, and Jamie was retrieving their camera data. So we got to walk, you know, they actually, you know, I guess apparently the actual film site was lost for a while. I mean, it looks nothing now like it did, you know, we're talking 40 years ago. So, you know, all kinds of stuff has grown up since then. But they actually used, surveyed the area and found, you know, landmarks that were there during the time of the filming. And then surveyed it and determined that that is the actual film site. So.
Yeah, I figure if anyone knows the site, it's got to be Steven.
Yeah. Well, I think Jamie was also key in doing the measurements. Like you say, they used Rene DeHinden's aerial photograph as a reference point, too. So it was a good time. It was, I imagined it being some huge trek into the woods, and it's way easier to get to than I would have thought. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Why is JM's movie not available right now?
There's an issue. I think there's some music that they want to use, but they haven't finished getting permission yet. So.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So. Did you get a chance to see it, Johnny?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. I mean, if you've read the book, it makes more sense because you have the context, but because it jumps around in the short, it's the condensed version of the book.
I haven't read the book, but I watched the short film, and it was really good. Very good production. Very unique as far as Bigfoot films go, and I look forward to the full-length feature.
Yeah, see, we've got a couple more monster movies coming. What's the one where they're attacking the kids in the cabin? Or is it the Squatch attacking the kids in the cabin? What is that, Elusive or...?
Extinct. Is that what it was called? Exist.
Something like that.
That's the name.
I think of a movie called Something Stinks in the Woods.
Extinct.
Yeah, Something Stinks.
That's what I'm naming my Bigfoot movie, Extinct. So look for it.
Look for it. See it on Street Video.
It's kind of been the year of the Bigfoot movie. There's been a lot of small productions being made.
Yeah, Bigfoot Wars just came out on, DVD. I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I'm not holding my breath. But.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. I've seen the previews for it. Paul Hayes saw it, and I think he posted a review on Facebook. And then... the big news of the week has been Stacy Brown Jr. found a non-human primate arm.
Yep.
What do y'all think about that?
I'm not holding my breath that it ends up being a skunk ape, but at least I like the fact that it's being, actually analyzed. He didn't put it up there and say I have a skunk ape arm. If it's a non-human primate arm, great.
Isn't that title kind of premature as well? That's an awful...
I don't know who's analyzed it yet. I mean,
I don't know who's to say non-human primate arm.
Right.
Because a lot of what I'm seeing is there are several people who, I guess, have some experience in... Bones saying that they don't even think that it's an arm. They think it's a leg. And there are a lot of different theories running around. Different people think they're making their own educated guesses.
Well, there's none of that in Bigfoot. I don't know what you're talking about. And you were being generous by saying educated guesses.
Yeah. Well, I won't make any guesses. I couldn't. I've never found bones. I don't analyze them.
Yeah.
And he didn't actually find it. It was acquired by someone in an area where he looks for Bigfoot and then given to him, apparently.
Right.
Someone of...
his brother's uncle's cousin's mother's stepson.
No, it was said that it was turned over to them by someone in law enforcement. Whether or not the person in law enforcement was the person who found the bone, I don't know. But I found that very odd and strange that law enforcement would turn over a bone to Bigfoot researchers, especially if it was unknown. Unless, you know, I don't know that I'm not sure how that works, but it just seems like if it were questionable or the remains of something that could possibly or potentially be important, it wouldn't be turned over to Bigfoot hunters or researchers or whatever.
Just depends on who found it. I know there's people that if they found a weird bone in the woods, they'd probably bring it to me. you look for Bigfoot. Look what I found.
Right, but if a police officer found a bone,
right.
I doubt they would say, here, I don't know what this is, you can have it.
Let's call the Sasquatch hunters.
Unless it was something ridiculous that they knew was something ridiculous and it had no worth or value, then I can understand them turning it over like, yeah, sure, here, you can have it. We don't need it.
Yeah.
So.
And what are people speculating? Alligator foot?
Yep.
Raccoon?
Yeah.
Baboon?
Oh, I didn't see that.
I mean, they're not wild there, but some have escaped and people have them for pets or something. I think that's the impression I'm under.
Yeah, I saw that there was I don't know if there was an enclosure of some sort where, I don't know if they were exotic monkeys or something, had escaped a few years ago. And, you know, they're saying that, you know, there's no telling where they had gone or if they survived and if it couldn't be something like that.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of speculation and hearsay involved.
Yeah, it gives us something to talk about for a little bit until it's actually analyzed. And what I don't like is it when it goes out as, like, you know, oh, it's, I would rather that it was processed first than have it thrown up first and then, then it comes back as, you know, a known animal. And then, see, those Bigfoot people are always throwing up stuff that they don't know what they're looking at anyway, so.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
and that,
true.
That's a question that I've asked before, just throughout the community, whether they would like more someone to tell right away if they think maybe they've found something and keep everyone updated throughout the process of them analyzing and having everything tested and researched and things like that, or if they would prefer everything be put together and released at once at the end of, you know, the finds. And it's kind of split in most situations. Like, everybody wants information, but it seems like no matter which way you go about doing it, there are people who complain. And I'm actually one of those people. I you know, I complain just to complain, I think, sometimes. But at least they're not, you know, like, because obviously I do see a lot of people saying that, you know, why would they put it out there why not just wait until after it was done? But at the same time, I also see them, I don't even think that they're saying possibly, but the undertones, we all know that that's there, that that's the reason why it's being done, because they're hoping or wanting there to be a possibility that it has something to do with Bigfoot or a skunk ape or whatever it is. But, you know, nobody made any definitive claims, so now it's just up in the air, and I wouldn't be surprised if we never hear anything else about it again. honestly.
Right.
I mean, hopefully we do, but I wouldn't be surprised if we don't.
I mean, what's the story on what Stacy is doing with it? Isn't he having it? Isn't he fitting it into have it analyzed? Thought he was.
Yeah, that was the idea. There was a video released where it looked pretty official, as though it was being handled in a, you know, lab tech type way, and they were sending it off, and that was a few days ago, and I don't think anything else has been updated since.
Yeah, if it was a skunk ape, I think it'd have to be a juvenile, because that arm looks pretty thin, if it is an arm.
Well, and that was another thing. I think that there were issues with the measurements. Any measurements I've seen started, you know, at I think the one on the ruler or the tape measure started at about the 6-inch mark from what you could see in the photo, and then led up to the 18-inch mark, and you couldn't see anything from the 1-inch to the 6-inch mark. So I'm not sure what the – do you know what I mean? I'm not sure what the actual measurements were. I'm guessing it was 18 inches. It would be silly to not be, but –
yeah, I saw that. It looked like the ruler started at like 6 inches instead of showing the whole thing.
Right, and you would think that – you know, people complain about the way researchers go about doing things, and that seemed simple to me. If you were going to take the time to measure or put something for scale, that you would at least show it in its entirety. It's like whenever you find a Bigfoot footprint, there's always just the one, and there's never anything usually shown for scale. It's just one perfect footprint, and it's kind of close up, and you don't see any of the surrounding area or anything. It's just, like,
well,
there it is.
A lot of people's feet in pictures with footprints.
Yeah, that's like, true.
I'm a big fan of them doing a video of the surrounding area, not just take a picture of the footprint or footprints, but do a video of the surrounding area and show me what is going on around it. You know, this could be in the middle of the city for all I know.
Right.
I watched Cliff Berrickman do a presentation on footprint evidence, and that's what's his, you know, besides taking multiple still shots, but doing video, you know, and actually using a ruler, you know, even a foot doesn't tell you how big it is, because everybody's feet are different size. So, video is awesome. And, you know, it's better than
yep.
Any other than doing stills. Plus, it catches more. It's hard to catch depth and stuff with a still picture.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you a focal point. It looks great, but it doesn't help with the big picture.
I guess, you know, it's easy to sit around and say for sure, you know, the different ways that we would go about doing things and criticize the way other people do things, and maybe they're doing it wrong. But when I sit back and think about it, and I'm at a weird point in Bigfoot, and if I go back to when I was more aligned to believe that there was a probability for their existence, you know, I don't, as far as sightings and things like that, I think in situations like that, everything happens so fast, there's really no right or wrong way to do it. And that's assuming they do exist and they are out there. The most credible sighting reports I had heard were, you know, split second, just, you know, quick things where there really wasn't much time to do anything. I mean, even with my cell phone, if I were to see something that I thought was strange or that I felt was worthy of, oh my gosh, what is that? It would take me more than 3 seconds to get my phone out and get my camera app pulled up. Do you know what I mean? To even take a picture.
Oh, yeah. It's no easy chore getting a picture. I've try to take pictures of deer when I'm walking through the swampy woods, and it.
Yeah, and that I can't even do. I mean, I have stopped my van and taken a blurry picture of a deer that was standing less than 5 feet from me.
You think Tim Fasano's videos are bouncy?
Yeah.
Mine was a joke, and I sunk into the bog, and I got like a flash of the deer on video. It was just a big disaster over a noise in the bushes.
Yeah.
You heard a noise in the bushes? That must have been a... So you're saying you saw Bigfoot.
Well, it was a bigger deer, so it had some decent feet.
Big hoof.
But yeah, I think the idea is to have a GoPro, at least one, have the thing mounted on you and do the best you can, and maybe have another one in your hand. And more people, I guess, helps too. But yeah, it's not easy to just pull the camera out, fire it up, and get that money shot.
And then even once you get it, I mean, what is it going to turn into? Here we all see what happens. It's not going to, you know what I mean? So why even bother? And then as far as, you know, this whole arm thing, there are so many people, you know, they mention daily. It's not as though whoever they send it back to, like they're going to come back and say, yes, this tested positive for skunk ape. There's nothing to compare it to. There is no skunk ape, what would you call it?
Specimen.
Right.
There's no,
database. So all it would come back is unknown, and unfortunately too many people, well, I mean, it could come back. That would be the most positive thing in this situation, that it could come back, because only under those circumstances are people then allowed to run free with their theories. So
true.
Unknown would be the best case scenario. But
well, looks like maybe we can let our guest on and see what he thinks about it.
Okay.
Our guest tonight is the leading authority on busting hoaxes. He exposed the 2008 Bigfoot in a freezer hoax and has been an integral part of exposing many more hoaxes, both from Freezer Boy as well as other hoaxers. The last time we had him on the show was over a year ago for our Ding Dong, The Hoax is Dead show. But he's not just a hoax buster. He's an avid Bigfoot researcher out of New York, who's appeared on many different TV programs, including one of my favorites, America's Book of Secrets, The Mystery of Bigfoot. I think that really portrayed him well. Welcome our friend, the Squatch Detective, Steve Culls, to the show. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Hello.
Hello. And you
doing
know what?
Great.
I think we have to add a new title to Freezer Boy, Reverend Freezer Boy, now since he's found the Bible.
I saw that. I was happy to see you just got on the straight and narrow path.
Yeah.
No more fake Bigfoot stuff from Mr. Dyer.
Just, you know, put your plaster of Paris and money in the collection basket, please.
I always thought he was a man of God, but apparently he's taken it to a new level, huh?
Well, you know, if there's money in it, why not? You know, they say church is good business.
True.
I also
and he wants to.
In that video where his come to Jesus video, he passed the collection plate.
You know, I gotta say, I haven't watched too much of his videos lately. I think the last time I've even paid attention to him was probably when after, Shooting Sasquatch came out. I mean, that was just such a laughable, it kind of just sunk him. That was it. When that movie came out, that was the end of it. So.
Yeah, I remember watching his hangout, and Pink was asking people when they came to, you know, believe in Hank and Rick, and it was very church-like. And then once the reviews started coming in, Rick was just turning red, then all of a sudden they cut the cord on the show. And You know, what was that?
The funniest thing was that I loved about the whole movie, and I do enjoy it rather well. It's actually, every once in a while I want to get a good laugh, I watch it because I know very well the two of the bozos that were portrayed in that, Biscardi, and it very accurately portrays Biscardi on how he really is. And, of course, Dyer, and when I saw the first clip in Dyer and what he's driving, I just started laughing. I go, that's the vehicle he had in 2010. That wasn't even the vehicle he had in 2011. And he's claiming to have shot that thing in 2012. So I'm just laughing my butt off. I said, well, that's the end of it. It's done. It's over with. He's got no defense now. And just to watch him so definitely fall on his face. And I mean, we all do at one time. If you're a squatter and you've been out there enough, you fall. You do make a couple of falls. But him wearing the cowboy boots and trying to walk around and just tripping over his own feet was quite entertaining, I'd have to say.
Yeah, I got a kick out of that movie, too. And Biscardi was funny with the whole Snapple thing. And
last season of Squatch Detective Radio, I put together a spliced audio. I don't know if you ever caught it. But I just made it like an interview between me and Biscardi. And I just spliced some of his comments around, and it's like, I really haven't got time for this, bleep. Joan, can you give me a Diet Peach Snapple? it was just so funny. And, I think the funniest part in that whole movie, and I actually kind of laughed at what Biscardi did, was when the guy is saying, he's sitting there looking up in the sky with that one guy that believed, Sasquatch came from UFOs. And he goes, oh, you see that? That's something. And the guy looks at him and he goes, that's an airplane. And he's like, no, it's not. He goes, yeah, look at the propeller. And I was laughing so hard. Because I think if you're a researcher, and you've done this for long enough, you really do run into people like that. Now, what makes me laugh even harder is that why would, Biscardi cart people halfway across, basically clear across the country to go visit this guy if this is what the guy was saying? And it's like, oh, this is the big one. I just don't bring my son in for everything. And the guy's talking about Bigfoot coming out of the UFOs. So, all right.
Biscardi used to be more legit, though, as far as research goes, didn't he?
No.
Don't believe it one minute. I will say this, and there's going to be a lot more coming about within the next, I think, 6 months, maybe a year. Not from me either. But let's just say this. $425,000 over, a six-year period, and he has yet to produce a single museum that he promises to do when he asks for this money. So you tell me if he sounds like it's a legit business.
You went out with him back in the day, huh, and did research?
Well, see, that's a very interesting story. I went out. I embedded myself into him because I wanted to, one, either catch him doing something as an outright lie, and number two, I wanted to see what the legitimacy of his operation was.
This was way before the freezer boy thing, right?
Well, it started in 2006.
Yeah, you guys came to Minnesota, didn't you?
No, the first time I met him in 2006, he was actually in Elmira, New York. And we had butted heads on a radio show. So I wanted to. So he put out the olive branch to come see him, and I did. And I was like, I don't really believe this guy. But then he invited me out to originally Phillips, Wisconsin, and from Phillips, Wisconsin, we went to Texas, and that was that. It was just like a 1 week thing. The next time I was with him was probably maybe 6 to 7 weeks, 8 weeks later. No, excuse me, I'm wrong. About a month later, he was trying to get me to go to Clarence, New York, which is about 4.5 hours, but I had known the pictures were an obvious hoax, and I was like, no, I'm not interested. And of course, he came out with this analysis on it that was completely wrong, because you can even see in the photos that, you know, they were trying to say, oh, this thing is X feet tall. Well, number one, the thing they were comparing it to was totally at a completely different angle. So I was like, listen, yeah, look at this picture. It's not a right angle. But anyway, it wasn't until October of 2007 that he had asked me to basically be a contracted member of his team to do forensic evidence collection and basically be a forensic interviewer, which is my background. I was a forensic interviewer by background. So I did, and I went on four trips with him, and out of those four trips, and I stayed with him, I went on four trips with searching for Bigfoot, but on about four out of four of those trips, I saw him maybe a total of maybe 2.5 weeks out of those four trips, month-long trips. And that's where I collected a lot of my information, and I had actually collected some financial sheets and some data, and I'm not going to really speak too much of that because it's right now there's something pending on that, which is going to be quite huge, though. And when the time comes, I'll be making announcements on that, because all of a sudden, here it is, fast forward 6 years later, now it's all coming to light, and things are actually coming to light for a lot of people. And truthfully, it has a lot to do with their former CFO, who's now in jail for a Ponzi scheme. And I'll get into that some other time when that news story breaks. I'll be getting a hold of you guys. That was it. I had left the team in April of 2008, and I kind of caught the starting a little bit of a lie. He was trying to say it was a TV show, and it really wasn't a TV show about his team. And at that point, I realized, well, he does do a lot of lying about his business dealings, and that much was certain. But I never saw him really outright lie about anything in the field. I've seen him completely twist like the Lizard Man. He completely did not listen to me about the analysis, which I looked at the teeth marks on the Ross and the van, people in Bishopville, Carolina, who had, North Carolina, I believe, who had the bite marks in the front of the van, and they were being accused of making those marks themselves, and all those are tool marks. Well, I had taken a look at them, and I could very conclusively say that they were canines, because I would find the top teeth and the bottom teeth actually corresponding to where the bites were, and they were very round in nature, indicating canine. So Biscardi happens to get on the news there, and he tells everybody, well, you haven't got a lizard man here. You've got a primate. And that was completely a lie, because primate teeth are rectangular. And it was like, really? And I almost flew home then, but he left. So I said, I'm just going to stick with the rest of the month. And that was really the beginning of the end for me there, because I couldn't really be associated with, if he's going to come on the news and completely contradict what the evidence shows, I don't want no part of it. So then the whole Georgia thing came to light, and then after the Georgia hoax got belly up, and you got to understand, a lot of people, I took a lot of heat for that for a while because I didn't automatically condemn Biscardi. Of course, I don't condemn anything unless I have the evidence. So when I tell you that, hey, there's something coming down the pipe about Biscardi now, I have the evidence. Back at that time, I couldn't say if Biscardi was involved in it, but then finally it led to a meeting months between myself and Dyer and Witten, months after, and then actually people never understood that the last time I had seen Biscardi was in April of 2008. I had never seen him during that whole time, nor had I ever met in person Rick Dyer or Matt Witten or any of those guys. I did not meet Dyer and Witten until February of 2009, when Dyer wanted me to do a bit on his documentary about Biscardi, because he was trying to say that Biscardi was involved, and I said I would do that on the condition that, I want open access. I want to see the sites where things happened. I want to see, any kind of documentation and evidence. And what got turned over to me was it did condemn Biscardi. It was actually physical proof. One of the things I wanted to do was I wanted to see the receipt for the freezer. And I got down there, and Dyer said, hey, I haven't got the receipt, but we can go to the store, I can show you the floor model, and then we'll go downstairs and we'll get the duplicate receipt. And he did exactly as he said he was going to do. He went down there, he gave me the duplicate receipt, and the duplicate receipt actually corresponded. It was 888 and it actually corresponded with Scardi's last flight into to Georgia to see the Freezer Boys. This is where he started making the revelations that he'd seen it, that he touched it, he felt it, and as we look into the receipt, there was just no way he could have. When it all came down to being BS, there was, and his excuse was, well, when I saw it, it was frozen, a little piece was sticking up. I touched the top of it, they closed the lid on it. Well, the funny thing was, if you know the cubic feet of that freezer, there's no way that Saturday morning that thing would have been frozen. So it just debunked his whole story. And it implicated him big time, and that's really, now he doesn't talk about it. So that's the whole Biscardi 2008 in a nutshell.
And then the thing was sold on eBay for an astronomical amount of money.
Well, that's a great thing. It was never sold. The deal fell through. But it was actually being handled by a paranormal radio show host by the name of Joshua P. Warren. He was selling it. And he was out of the Carolinas as well. I believe he's in South Carolina. He's the one who put it up on eBay for them. And, you know, in my book, 50 Large, I did a Freedom of Information Act on the police department. And you would think I would have gotten, you know, maybe 10 pages. I got 89 pages of police report out of this. And when the police decided that this was baloney, that Biscardi was full of beans, was when they noticed that one of their officers noticed that the suit was for sale on eBay. So the captain calls up Biscardi, who says, no, I never authorized this, blah, blah, blah. And Biscardi, being a sociopath himself, starts getting loose-lipped and jawed and starts rambling on. And then he says, well, you know the suit's being sold for $250,000. Well, if you didn't authorize it, how do you know about it? So the police felt that Biscardi wasn't being honest. So they closed the case the next day, turned it over to the DA who refused to prosecute on it. And that was that. So, yeah, the suit was never sold. It fell through. The last I knew about it, it was still being held by T.J. Biscardi, Tom's son, who lives in Kentucky, and it's in his shed. That's the last I've heard of it, and that was as late as a few years ago.
Interesting. I never knew that.
So,
wow. So you wrote a book on that.
Yeah, 50 Large, and it's available only through my website. 312 pages, and it's just basically an odyssey of what I experienced on each trip, some of these things that Biscardi was trying to pull. And there's some very funny stories, including where I was originally scheduled to speak in the whole Nubby Bigfoot conference way back when, and I, for whatever reason, I couldn't make it. But there was a newspaper article where somebody had misquoted and said that I was a former FBI agent. And Biscardi freaked. And he confronted me in the car, and he asked me, serious as you would, you know, serious as cancer, Steve, were you ever an FBI agent? And I looked at him, and he's looking back at me. I thought he was kidding. You know, I, like an idiot, probably should have said, yes, actually, I am an undercover FBI agent. Please drop me off at the nearest field agent. I was like, no, that's fine, man. But it was just so funny how paranoid the man is. And obviously, you know, he obviously had a fear of the federal government. And now you understand why. And some of the things I uncover in that book, they're very eye-opening, and I leave some open-ended questions. Well, all of a sudden, these open-ended questions, 6 years later, are finally getting answers. And I just can't wait for when this breaks, because it's not my thing, and it's not my investigation, but I kind of pointed it in the right way, and I'm very excited about that.
Oh, very cool. Is he still out searching for Bigfoot?
I believe he is. I mean, I pay very little mind to him, because since 2008, he's kind of been nullified. You know, he did shooting Sasquatch, but or shooting Bigfoot, or whatever the heck the name of the show is, and he did that. But really, that's the only thing he did. I mean, you can see the quality of people he gets for witnesses now. I mean, he's basically going to anybody he can, even people who say, oh, I see it kind of coming out of the UFO. I haven't seen him do anything spectacular.
I heard someone in Wisconsin had a dogman sighting, and they got a hold of a Scardy, or he got a hold of them, and he kept telling them, no, you saw a Bigfoot. And so he went out there, I think, and I don't know if that was around the time you were out there, but I think he's been to Wisconsin a few times doing investigations, putting words in people's mouths. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this was, I mean, I don't know what year that was, but the only time I had traveled to Wisconsin was back in 2006. And that was Phillips, and that was most definitely a Bigfoot thing. And the funny thing is, because I had been in contact with the BFRL prior to the Scardy, and it's really strange because we put some trail cameras up. And the Scardy told them, hey, listen, don't go anywhere near these cameras. Stay away from them. We'll put them up. We'll do some research. We'll come get them in the morning, see if we get anything. And we did. You know, much to the Scardy's credit, we did. The next day, we pulled the cards on the trail cameras, and guess what we saw? Not a Bigfoot, not even a dog man, but the guy that we came out to see was messing with the trail cameras.
Oh, God.
So I looked at him and went, oh, my God, there's a dude. What's he doing at 6 in the morning when we told him to stay away from him? So you gotta wonder what's going on with people's minds sometimes, or how legitimate that was.
Where did he get all this money to go chasing Bigfoot across the country?
Well, Biscardi basically gets investors, and he does it by a couple of tracks. Like I said, he's gotten almost $500,000 to put up museums. Well, I haven't seen him put up a museum. There's a lot of talk of museums. There was talk of a museum on the Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. There was talk of that was in 2006. There was talk of that was 2007. There was talk of a museum on the White Mountain Apache tribe lands. That was 2007 and 2008. Then there was talk of a museum, the Bigfoot Shops and Props in one of the casinos in Las Vegas when he was temporarily living in Las Vegas. None of these projects have ever materialized. So maybe some of that money he's getting for that project has been turned into that. Then the other thing, too, is people have invested like X amount of dollars in one of the Bigfoot Lives movies, and then he uses that to travel to get the actual film footage to make the movie. But to me, I don't know. When you get $100,000, $200,000 to make a movie, and it looks like you only spent about $100,000 to make it, kind of makes you wonder. You know, so.
Interesting. So you disappeared for a while. You kind of fell off the face of the earth there. Was that just off Facebook, or? You just took a big break?
When was this, now?
Yeah, until recently.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, a lot of things have been going on. You know, I ended up moving back in February, and then the Internet service, we actually moved to another part of the state. Not very far, you wouldn't think. In fact, we were just a community over, and we had lost some really fast Internet service. So we started having trouble doing the radio show, so we postponed it to see what we could do about that. And then what happened was I'd gotten another job. I'm back to private investigation again. So I've been working like buku hours, but, you know, I can still get my face, you know, I can still get things done. But then our apartment was flooded where I lived, so I ended up moving again. So it's been so topsy-turvy lately between the new job and the moves and stuff like that. It's like life had taken a life of its own. You know, we did get out in the springtime a little bit. In fact, I just came back today from a weekend outing. And, you know, I had to wash out probably 10 pounds of dirt off my Jeep. And, you know, and then I'm off tomorrow again in the morning to go to work. Not very far, luckily. But, you know, sometimes work will take me, you know, a few hours away. So that makes for very long days. So, you know, people have been asking me where I've been. I've been there. I've also been very quiet. I mean, it's not like I don't see. I have my smartphone, and, you know, you say even on Facebook I've been quiet. I do. I see a lot of stuff going on, and, you know, I see a lot of politics going on. I see a lot of biting at one another going on. I see a lot of wild claims from some people going on. And, you know, and I'm not even talking about the Stacey Brown Arm thing. You know, like I said, like the Ketchum study and like everything else, you know, we just got to wait and see how that fetters out. I'm not getting myself excited about it. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. I'm just saying, okay, well, you know, show me. And when, you know, when time comes to show me, I'll take a look, and then I'll evaluate it then. But, you know, we've had, you've seen what's transgressed in the last couple of years. I mean, we had Dyer come out with another body hoax, and that started all kinds of war and factions going on. Right after that, we had the Melba Ketchum thing, and that came out, but that wasn't where, you know, well, like I said, I believe that, you know, Melba Ketchum had set the bar, you know, at 7 feet, and she came in at 4.5 feet. And now everybody that supports her is saying, oh, the 4.5 feet is good enough. And I call shenanigans on that. I you know, people know I disagree. Doesn't mean I hate them. Doesn't mean I dislike them. I'm sorry. It's my opinion, and I'm entitled to it. And right after that, then we had the whole Smedja Bear thing, now the Smedja samples, the Bigfoot Valley, where Smedja was really smug and kind of changed the story a bit. So what do we have here? A Smedja thing is nothing but a story. And, you know, and until proven otherwise, that's what it is. It is what it is. What else happened? How can we forget Todd Standing and that whole thing? And now, you know, Dr. Bindernagel, speaking out and kind of on his side a bit. And then we have Dr. Melvin speaking on his side a bit and actually doing a radio show and appearing on Survivor Man with him, and let alone Les Stroud appearing with him. And, you know, I mean, between myself and a guy by the name of Daniel Falconer, and Phil Poland, you know, Daniel Falconer and Phil Poland did a separate report. I had done some breakthrough stuff about, you know, the Blinky one, you know, the supposed video, which, you know, I proved beyond a reasonable doubt it was a JPEG, and people and his little followers there, I call them the Standlings, and tried to say, oh, what do you mean? Where's the source of that picture? The source of the picture was Todd Standing, and he gave that to the newspaper who, you know, took that his JPEG they sent in and just put it up online, didn't touch it, didn't do nothing to it, because there's all the properties to it. So, and that's where that came. So that proved beyond a reasonable doubt that was generated from a photograph. And then, you know, like I said, Daniel Falconer and Phil Poland came out with this whole report on, you know, first what I call Puppet Face, which I had done a couple of years ago when he first came out with that. And so he's pretty much sunk in and everybody knows it. He's kind of going by the wayside now. He's not making waves. He had his 15 minutes of fame, and we know what Standing's original thing was, is he was trying to do a Blair Witch-style movie. That's why he created the Savannah website, much the way they had BlairWitch.com, which was supposedly about the filmmakers doing this movie. And that's what Todd Standing wanted to originally do, except for a website called GhostTheory.com busted his ass on it when somebody came up with the actual newspaper article he had put out there with Sylvanic Video number one, and combine that with him using an alias to run his production company. He was using the name Todd Rockwell, and his sister was using the name Louise something or other, and Louise Standing is now reportedly to be a Hollywood makeup artist. So when you put all those together, you know, it smells like Todd Standing is a manure salesman with a mouthful of samples. So that's it.
Yeah, you were investigating and examining Todd Standing's work long before this recent deal with Survivor Man, weren't you?
In 2006. I created SquatchDetective.com January 1st, 2006. And Todd Standing was... my investigation of Todd Standing started probably about 3 or 4 months after I started SquatchDetective.com. So he's been in my hall of shame, you know, way back when, you know, almost since the beginning of the interview. He was actually you know, I didn't create the Hall of Shame, I think, until 2008, but he was the second member in there, or 2009, or whatever it was. But, you know, Todd Stanley has been investigated by me for quite some time. You know, long before Newton Perry, long before the name Rick Dyer even came around. So, you know, Todd Stanley was no, you know, that's why when I looked at it, I go, wait a minute. So when people tell me, you know, why do we pay so much attention? Why don't we just ignore these people? Well, what happened was Todd Stanley was a nice guy. He's not a nasty guy. He's not going to go make phony newspaper articles, you know, get some newspaper articles and then change them to put my name in them like Dyer did, or he's not going to call you names and get on his radio show and claim that you set him up like a Biscardi would have. He's just going to keep quiet about it and just roll and keep doing things. So he gets kind of forgotten. Now, that's why people say, why don't we just forget these people? Well, when you're on to somebody like a Dyer, what happened to Dyer? Dyer's hopes crashed and burned. And he, you know, I don't know. I hear these rumors now he's in Colorado. Last I knew he was back in Griffin, Georgia. But his girlfriend, she's gone. You know, he calls her wife, but he was never married to her. You know, because he's been calling her his wife, but, you know, I know his wife's real name, and frankly, it's not Lily, and it's not, her last name certainly isn't Dyer. And she's disappeared. And his, you know, so it seems like he's alone again. And, you know, everybody knows what he is. The thing is we ignore somebody like a Todd Standing, and what happens? He ends up on Survivor Man. He ends up doing a radio show with Dr. Jeff Mosman. So when we have people like a Dyer or a Biscardi or even a Linda Newton Perry who runs a blog by the name of Bigfoot Ballyhoo, we need to keep screaming loud and clear that these people are frauds and hoaxes, and we need to have our little information cards out as to why. Because if we don't, what happens is they slip through the cracks, they get on these TV shows. Because have we spoken enough about Todd Stanton, perhaps one of the producers may have seen the number of things that go against the grain of him being legitimate. You know, I know a producer, unless they're looking to make a farcical video like Morgan Matthews, would have never put a Rick Dyer with Survivor Man, would never have put a Biscardi with a Survivor Man. You know, it was Todd Stanley, and he is just such a dirty history. Well, my question is, okay, if we had only been more vigilant and talked more about Todd Stanley and drew him out and demanded answers and pulled him in front of the court of public opinion more, maybe Les Stroud would have asked Adrian Erickson, which I think would have probably been a more, or a Tom Steinberg, which would have been a far more better selection than a Todd Stanley.
Mhm. Yeah, you hear that there's more Survivor Man episodes coming out now. There's going to be 6 more that Les just announced. He doesn't say if it's with Meldrum and Standing, but I'm guessing Meldrum's going to be in there.
So at Beachfoot this year, we actually had him Skype in. We had Les Stroud Skyped into Beachfoot, so that was kind of cool.
Good, yeah.
And he was talking about I think he was looking for possible sites to go to for the show.
Right. Well, that's really awesome that he's thinking about expanding it other than what he's seen through Todd Stanley.
Yeah. I mean, how do you think Meldrum's going to play his cards now that things are winding down?
I don't know. Truthfully, I don't know. You know, Jeff is a smart guy. It kind of threw me a bit when, you know, why would he be doing a series of radio shows with, you know, and he's taken a few bumps. I mean, between the whole Standing thing, and then there was that Russian Yeti thing that he got his mug on that it turned out to be, and, you know, rightfully so, you know, Jeff complained that, you know, he was kind of misled about what it was about, or he, you know, he didn't fully understand what the show was going to be about. And that can happen to people from time to time. You know, the thing I always say is, you know, I have a, on my website, I have Spock Spectrum University, and there's a whole section on media, and people should brush up on it. You know, if you've got somebody from media calling you, you know, I've seen a lot of you know, Matt Moneymaker was you know, before finding Bigfoot, he was on Fox News, and he got ambushed about in an interview about Bigfoot. I forget exactly what particular thing they were trying to cover, and he had misspoken. He had said, well, we have good evidence. And the reporter started getting, where is this evidence? And I know that, for the most part, media isn't all what it's cooped up to be. When I went on the Fox News, I was on Fox and Friends in the morning, and Steve Doocy was nothing but nice, and I was answering questions, and then, of course, comes the smarmy question when Brian Kilmeade asked, well, is this all you think about? And I bit my tongue because my natural response was, well, I do think about your mother sometimes. That was going to be my natural response back to him, but I bit my tongue. You know, I wonder how that would have played out. If he was on national TV and I dogged him. I had a radio show long enough at that point where I could just like, But I didn't, because I was trying to be serious about things. And I just ignored it, and I just said, well, you know, this whole thing just made my life a living hell. I told them point blank, I wanted vindication for the witnesses. But, you know, it's neither here nor here. Media can get very smarmy, because for some reason, they feel they need to poke fun of it to make themselves look, you know, kind of smarter than everybody else. And that I find insulting. And I remember in 2003, I was doing a bit with Paul Bartholomew. He's the author of Monster of Northwoods and Bigfoot, History of Bigfoot in New York and New England. And he's got another book out, too, I think Mysteries of the Northwoods as well. Great guy, very knowledgeable. Actually, got a degree in journalism at Castleton State University in Vermont. He was a protege of Dr. Warren Cook, who was a big-time anthropologist, one of the first anthropologists, along with Grover. He was along the lines of Grover Cranz, I should say. He came along in the late 70s to investigate the Bigfoot mystery. He was an anthropologist as well. He was a firm believer that it existed. And, Paul and I are doing this bit in the morning. And the reporter on the scene is doing the bit, and he's corresponding with that. And between a break, he goes, I hear him go, you know, he's bleeping. You know, he's calling the guy the F word. And I go, what's up? And he says, oh, nothing. He goes, they're just like the anchorman is just rolling his eyes, you know, at this whole thing. And it's kind of embarrassing because you guys got here at 5 o'clock in the morning to do this. And he goes, it's kind of embarrassing. You would take your time out. You're dead serious. I see you guys are dead serious. And he goes, and this jerk is, you know, rolling his eyes in the studio. That's what you get, you know, with some of the media. Conversely, when I did my Bigfoot Chronicles series, which was a two-part series that Fox 23 News did out of Albany, their anchorman, their lead anchorman, actually hosted the, you know, showcased the whole thing. And he was wonderful. Didn't roll his eyes, didn't make fun of it, just reported it right down the middle neutrally. Actually, not even neutrally. They didn't really even talk to skeptics. They only had spoken to me. They'd spoken to Chuck Adnolfi of the Northeastern Sasquatch Research Association, Ezra, and they talked to a witness. Of course, they kept their words. They disguised his voice. They shadowed his face so you couldn't see him, and they talked to him about his encounter he had. God rest his soul, that was John Weitzel, and he's since passed on, and we've let his name out of the closet and his picture out of the closet since then. But, it was just a wonderful piece. They took it seriously. They put it out there, and they didn't have to bring in a critic. And that brings me to the other thing, is the skeptics. And, you know, we talk about fly-by-night, you know, Sasquatch evidence. Like people say, oh, well, you know, truth by inference, you know, and they're trying to infer, or they're trying to do this, or, you know, they're trying to say these rock structures are bigger. Conversely, there's also skeptics that will, and even scientists, and this is the biggest thing, be very careful what scientists skeptics say. Because if you listen to the Monster Quest I was in, which was Bigfoot in New York, it aired in 2008, if you listen very carefully to what was being said by the two scientists there, and I can't recall their names off the top of my head. One was the we have in New York State, we don't have a Department of Fish and Wildlife. We have the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, a.k.a. NCON. Well, they had an NCON biologist on the show, and they had an anthropologist from the State University of Buffalo. Now, listen to what a couple of the statements that they said. The NCON biologist turned around and said, well, you know, if these things existed, people would be seeing them. Excuse me? And then the second one, the scientist, the anthropologist said, I just don't see any evidence that says that North America could support a large primate. And that's what? Because in the biologist case, people are seeing, and we get, you know, between us as a collective, we probably get 1,000 reports a year. So people are seeing them. And the second thing is, last I knew, North America won't support a large primate. Well, let's go back a couple of hundred years when there was Native Americans, and, you know, we're primates, and the Native Americans were certainly primates, and the land certainly provided for them. We're not small primates, we're large primates. So you've got to look at what they say, and you see the bias, because they tell you untruths, and because they have a doctor, a PhD behind their name, or a doctor in front of their name, it's supposed to be taken as facts or taken as very weighted evidence. Obviously, these guys are true opinion out there. It means nothing more than whatever, you know, a Todd Standing says, or a Biscardi says, or a Dr. Meldrum says when it relates to opinion. So, but they tried to pass this off at because they're a doctor. Well, why should their opinions be weighted any more than I? When I'm put up there, I'm asked to show evidence. When a PhD is there, they're only asked to throw out their opinion, and that's got weight on it, even though it can be wrong, as I had just proven. I don't know, guys, does it make sense to you?
Yeah, I think that there's enough witness sightings where there should be a large investigation put forth by science and biologists. You know, let's give this a big shot and let's see.
Well, that would be like the, and maybe I'm wrong here, but that would be like the Vatican training, you know, a couple hundred priests and becoming geologists. You know, it's not in their best interest to go and try to disprove what they've been saying for the last couple hundred years. You know,
yeah.
Science has always been against the grain. Remember when Einstein came out with his theory of relativity, it took about 10 years for it to be proven, and it took another scientist to back up his results. So, you know, science does not want to be told they're wrong. I mean, look what they did to Galileo. Galileo had to cover his mouth about what he felt the universe was. Copernicus, saying, why? These people were prosecuted. Columbus was laughed at, thought as not only wrong in science, but thought a religious blasphemy, thinking that the world is not flat. You know, so you look at some of these things, and you know, you think, well, you know, yeah, but that was years ago. Well, folks, it was only, you know, 500 years ago. It wasn't very long ago in the spectrum of it. You know, so you know, we have something, you know, the people that go against the grain get prosecuted to the point where they're hated at some points. And I feel that that's the point the media has done. Because, and it's funny, because I remember talking to John Green about this, and he finds it really odd how in the 70s and the 60s and 50s, the press really was our allies, and science was the enemies. Now it's kind of like almost science is kind of like the enemies a bit, but they're a little more lenient now. You know, since we've had Jane Goodall talk about the possibilities and all this other stuff, now it seems to be this role reversal. It's the media, the mainstream media, for the most part, has been our enemy. I mean, top story today, you know, Bigfoot in our backyard. You know, it's like the sarcasm just drips in their voice. You know, is there really a Bigfoot in Bulmer County? You know, their sarcasm is unbelievable.
Okay, we're reaching the top of the hour. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back for more with the Squatch Detective. We're back. Squatch Detective Steve Coles.
That was a pretty good jam and riff. Like it.
Thank you. I was wondering, has there been any new sightings in your general area? Or have you been out researching lately?
There's been a few I've been hearing rumors of. And there's always there's been some sightings in the Rutland, Vermont area, and I've got some folks out there working at it as we speak, trying to track down some witnesses. I know there were some sightings in the Vermont. Seems like a lot of the action has been in Vermont lately, and in actuality, my weekend was in Vermont, and. I have to say, we do have some stuff to analyze, and that's exciting because there's some really strange stuff going on yesterday, and I think that as or last night, and as a couple of weeks goes by, we should have some audio clips of what we heard, and it was some phenomenal sounds last night, just phenomenal. I mean, yes, did we hear a barred owl? Oh, absolutely. Did we hear coyote? They were early on in the evening, and they were relatively close. Yes. But what we heard in between, we're not quite sure of. So we're gonna fine tune it a bit. We're gonna get those recordings. I'm gonna get them out to a couple of people I know that have some experience in listening to animal sounds to see if it's anything they've heard of. And because I myself, being out there all these years, have never quite heard these noises. And not to mention there was a pretty big heat signature that we discovered on my thermal detection unit. And we had a couple of people actually see something, and we got to get more in depth as to exactly what they saw and how comfortable they feel about talking about it. But it was a pretty productive and interesting night. And the area we went into is it's all wildlife management area. It's just pristine. And I remember the first time that these guys had never heard this particular bird actually squawk. And I was trying to hear that. It sounds like a pterodactyl. Actually, it was a heron, the great blue heron. And this area just has tons of them. All of a sudden, you see one, and you think it's a pterodactyl because its wingspan is like 6 feet wide. It's just a huge bird. And just an awesome time. And that's what it's about in reality. It's just about having a good time. But as far as any other new sightings, to my immediate area in New York, no. My research area, I'm kind of letting that sit for a year, let that rest and ferment a bit. We went out there in the springtime, and it was very quiet, so we'll let that ferment, see what happens with that area. We'll go back at least once this year. We'll go back in the fall and see if anything has stirred up. But for now, we've been hitting this other area very close by where last year we had gotten kind of that thermal image of the single solitary thing walking along the shoreline of a steep embankment without the use of any kind of lighting, without even really being heard, and obviously without swearing. And if I know when I walked in that area in the daytime, I was swearing because it's relatively almost I would say an 80-degree climb down and a climb up via rocks to get up to and down to where that was in the shoreline. So that was a very interesting time. So we just keep constantly hitting these areas where these sighting reports have been. And, of course, I always keep my ears out for other sighting reports, even if they're secondhand, because sometimes I'll bump into folks and they'll say, hey, yeah, I know that my neighbor, blah, 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 saw something over on the other side. Now, I may not even track down that witness, but that kind of goes into the data bank in my head. Okay, somebody had seen something there last year, but obviously they felt strong enough to talk to a neighbor about something they knew. So I didn't necessarily need to drag them down or track them down. To me, it seems like lately that your cursory sighting reports, I saw it across here, or I saw it in the field, or, okay, that's wonderful. If I don't get them right away, then, I don't need the complete story. I don't need to get there completely. And people say, well, how can you say that they're accurate or real then? Well, obviously, if you told a friend or a neighbor, then they honestly believe they had seen something. If they report it to me and not anybody else, then I have to go through that. Well, they could be just trying to BS me. So then you have to go through all the motions. of trying to prove or disprove what they're saying to you. So that's kind of my philosophy at it now that I'm an old cranky old man.
How many people do you go out in the field with, and how many people do you like to go out in the field with?
Well, it all depends. I mean, you know, I can go out in the field with 50 people, and I will give them, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 or 12 different areas to go, so they're not such a huge group. So it doesn't really matter the number of people that go on a mission. It's what you do with them. You know, I'm not a real big believer in what Finding Bigfoot's doing by having the world's biggest Sasquatch hunt and try to flush things out. I've actually been on those type of missions before. They don't work. They absolutely don't work. Because everybody's too preoccupied about, wow, this is huge. Look at this. Wow, oh, my God. And then you throw in a TV show, and, you know, some people, especially, you know, the people who get stars in their eyes, they're like, oh, look, there's Matt, there's Lulu, there's Renee, there's Cliff. And that's all they care about. So it to me, it's just counterproductive. I know maybe it's a Guinness Book stab, I don't know. The whole idea is to work in small units. Last night at our peak, we had a couple of folks leave because they had either commitments or work commitments. We had 4 stay overnight, and we had 6 on the mission, and we stayed together. And so 6 is not a bad group to do scouting. But really, the way I do missions is completely unique. I let them come to me, and I stay right in base camp a lot of times. And we'll do calls, knocks, whatever. Let them come to us. They're not going to be afraid of us. If anybody's read What Would Sasquatch Do, which is a book about primate behavior and how it relates to the Sasquatch mystery, because Sasquatch is a primate, and that kind of eliminates the whole argument, well, is it a relic hominid, is it a hominid, or is it a pongan? It kind of escapes all that. And we know they're curious. You know, obviously, if we're out there doing stuff, and just having a fire and talking amongst themselves, they're going to be drawn in by this. They're not afraid. Like I said before, you know, if something goes boom in your neighborhood, the cat may run under the table, the dog may scamper, but we're looking out the window to see what it is. That's a primate behavior, the natural propensity for curiosity. So that's their weakness. So that's what we try to exploit. We don't try to run after them or sit and hide and wait and stuff like that, you know, because that's counterproductive. That's been tried for years and years and years and years and years. But how many times have we heard the story of people around a campfire and all of a sudden they see them on the edge of the campfire? You know, it's always by chance. It's always something they're curious about us. So the whole mission idea, the whole mission creep is to let them become curious about us. And it's kind of funny because, you know, my researcher, we found this pattern, and people said, damn, I've had the same thing happen. It is you'll find them, all of a sudden you'll get all these noises around the camp, you move out, and they move back. You come back in, and a half hour later, it all starts up again around you, and you move out and again. And you know, like I said, we play with digital recorders, and we've gotten, you know, grunts and noises and tree snaps and breaks. And we played with cameras, and we've gotten eye shine. We played with thermal imagers, and we've gotten the bone solid. So everything is working. Everything's falling in place. It's just a matter of, you know, eventually, hopefully, we will get something that we can use that's tangibly going to prove the existence without killing them. And, you know, I'm a no-kill guy, just to put that out there. And there are people that believe that killing one of them would do this. And they have a valid argument as well. I'm not going to negate their argument. I'm not going to say that they're bad people because they believe in that argument. That's their belief. They're entitled to it. There's too many people that get angry about the whole kill, no kill debate. I don't. I'm very, very generic about this. You know, we're all out for the common goal. And if there's anything about the common goal I try to tell people and what I've told other teams is that my team's mission, goal number one, is to have fun. Nothing else. If nothing else, we're going to have fun. All right, piece of equipment doesn't work. All right, put it there. Let's have fun. Let's just keep it light. Let's have a few laughs. Let's eat. Let's have a good time. But let's do the mission, too. And when you're coming from that kind of attitude, Everybody's having a good time. And that's what you need to do. You can't be militaristic about it. Which I want to lead into my next thing is that the comment of, I just want to say, wear all this camouflage. You ain't going to sneak up on them. You're damn straight, generally, you're not. But number one, I'm going to take every advantage I can. And number two, there's other bad animals out there that I might not want to see me right off the chute. So, and number three is that the gear, the camo stuff is built to be outside so it lasts. And the whole vest thing, people go, you know, it's kind of funny when, you know, people say, oh, you wear that tactical vest, that's ridiculous. And then people come out and visit me and they see me put the tactical vest on. And then, oh, there's a track. And I rip into a pocket and I pull out a rod that I can put down. I pull out another pocket. I pull out a camera. I can take a picture. Or I want to collect some evidence. I pull a pocket out, some gloves, and I pull out a evidence collection container. Or I need something. I pull out of another pocket. I pull out a compass. You know, or
yeah, I think
tool
it's badass.
You know, the greatest thing is I can cart around all this stuff and not tip over. And I can have it very quick. You know, and that's the cool thing about it.
That's what makes you the squash detective. I mean, you got all the gear. You're a detective in and out of the field.
Well, the whole idea about it is that I wanted to... People would realize that you know, I originally was a one-man show. I mean, I was out there by myself, so I had, you know, what am I going to do? You know, if I want to carry all this gear in, what if, you know, and there was times I would go deep in woods and camp out and stuff like that. Well, I couldn't do that and carrying in a back, just in a backpack. I couldn't carry all that stuff in a backpack. So the vest made sense. Put a vest on, you know, with all my squatting gear, throw my backpack on with extra clothes and my tent and my bag and all that stuff, and now I'm completely packed in. You know, so the vest also served as a carrying purpose as well. And it's come in handy many a time. I mean, a lot of people don't know I carry a first aid kit in that vest, too. So if somebody gets a snake bite, I got a snake bite kit on. You know, and we are in snake, in at least my area, we're in snake areas. And the cool thing is last night, or actually yesterday when we were doing our day scout, somebody had spotted a younger snake. We had spotted a larger snake, and all of a sudden somebody said, Steve, you know what kind of snake this is? And, excuse me, and it was a black kind of, it kind of looks like a, you know, it's kind of a nice cannon snake, but it's black and shades of black. And it was a great opportunity to show people that had never seen a snake before out in the wild like that or that kind of snake that, hey, listen, stop, let's come around, let's circle around the snake for a second, take a look at it. Is it poisonous? And everybody's like, I go, it's not, because look at the shape of its head. It's not kind of triangular shape, it's a rounded shape, that means it's not poisonous. And watch, so take a stick and you see it's not making any dodges, it's not acting like it's a poisonous snake, it's just acting fearful, and I go, watch. And as soon as we move to the side, the snake goes away into the brush, and so there's always an opportunity to learn. Conversely, like I said to that, I always try to pass off my knowledge to anybody I can, but I don't know everything and anything, so I love learning too. So there's times when I go on missions with the people that have been around, and that's why I love discussions with some of the vets, because I'll pick up a few things from them. I mean, obviously, some of the stuff I had to book learn, some of the stuff I had learned on my own, some of the stuff I've gotten from veterans. And it makes a big difference. And there is a propensity for a lot of people now, because there's a lot of new Bigfoot researchers out there, there's a lot of propensity to kind of disrespect the veterans, but the veterans have been doing it. And, you know, let's throw a few of these people out there, and they see a snake and they jump. You know, well, look at it first before you jump. You may not have to jump. Or if you jump, it may be the wrong jump to do. So, you know, there's a place for us old guys. I'm calling myself an old guy because, you know, I've been doing this since 99, and I'm almost done with the 15 years now already, and it seems like yesterday.
Well, let's see. Let's take a caller. We got someone that's been waiting for a little while here. Let's see if we can let them on. 210, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, John. How you doing tonight?
Great, man, great.
Fantastic. This is Mike Rickerson coming to Central West Texas calling for Steve Calls tonight. I was listening to that interesting discussion about his vest. I'd like to get Steve to send me one of those down here to Texas. I could use a good handy vest down here in this area. Steve, I wanted to ask you a question if you have a moment.
Sure.
I wanted to ask you about some of this new evidence that's coming out with regard to hair testing. I know that some people now, including Todd Disattel, are putting out information that, you know, there may be some breakthroughs with regard to hair. And, you know, you hear around and about that, you know, a Bigfoot hair lacks a medulla or a center there that can give you a good DNA sample. And, you know, you're seeing a lot more people that are coming forward with some physical evidence. And I'm wondering or wanting to know if you've heard of anyone right now or any labs in the country that are testing or maybe on the verge of getting a hold of some good physical samples that might give us some promise. Because I heard Stacey Brown had a gator leg, had a rear gator leg that was misidentified or possibly misidentified by some Florida workers as a possible primate. And we're seeing some samples that, you know, we get more and more disappointment. So I'm just wondering if you think there's any a good positive movements towards obtaining or testing some physical samples.
Well, you know, I don't know of any specific case. I mean, I don't even know the Stacey Brown case in particular. I happened to bump into him in a show actually just a couple of nights ago, and he was talking about this, you know, this primate arm, and I don't know much about it, and I've always had the wait-and-see attitude, but I think that any time we have a researcher that sends a piece of evidence to a lab, it always holds the chance of being a breakthrough. Unfortunately, over the years, we haven't seen that happen. you know, whether it be a Justin Smedja bear shake or a gator on a stick. I don't know. But, you know, there's Disattel is an honest guy, and he is down here, I think, at the University of Syracuse, somewhere thereabouts. And he'll give all the evidence an honest shake, so that's a good thing. And there's other DNA houses, but you have to kind of take it with a grain of salt because, you know, it's very true. We don't – if you take a hair and they say, well, we don't know what that hair is, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a Sasquatch hair. If they DNA test a hair and they say, well, you know, we don't know what it is, you have to find out what kind of primers did they use. Did they use primers for feline? Did they use primers for Ursa, which are bear? Did they use primers for human? Or did they use primers for primates? We don't know. So that's pretty quintessential. I don't know exactly how it's done per se because I'm not an expert on DNA. I know some stuff, but, you know, that's something you have to talk to the DNA house when you submit a piece of evidence or call up and say, listen, I have this piece of hair I need identified what kind of animal it is. And the minute you tell them Bigfoot, they may say, have a nice day. Hang up on you. So you're kind of, some of the places, you got to be, you know, when Biscardi sent the hand of unknown origin out, and that was the thing I got actually a discussion about last night about when I was talking about DNA, and I said that, you know, Biscardi sent this thing out, and he completely lied about what the lab had sent to him. And people in the Bigfoot world wanted to know so much about it that they were calling the labs themselves. And the lab had like 20 or 30 calls, 40 calls, and they kept telling people, I'm sorry, we can only release this information to the researcher. So it would behoove whoever is sending a sample out to make sure that they don't disclose who they're sending it out to first. Well, we're going to send it out to X, Y, and Z lab to have tested because what's going to happen is you're going to have 40 and 50 people call that lab, and then that lab is never, ever going to want to do another Bigfoot sample again, and they will tell you no. So the whole idea is if you have a piece of evidence, okay, Stacey Brown talked about it first. I guess that's his prerogative. Me, I would say, when I did the Vermont Trail Camp photo, I had that photo for 3.5 months. I didn't say anything, make any announcement until number one we were ready to, and well after we had the doctor who said that it was not something flying in front of the camp. So there's a lot of different things, and I think any lab and any breakthrough, you know, any time somebody sends evidence in is a breakthrough. And by the way, I wanted to let you know, too, that Walmart is now carrying the SOG tactical vests. They're $60. And good quality.
Much. Thank you so much, Steve. Appreciate you taking my call, guys. Have a great evening.
All right.
Thanks, Michael.
So I hope I got all those questions answered.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd think that hair would be the number one piece. You think we'd find more hair, and that should be the biggest piece of evidence out there, as hairy as these things are.
Well, hair in the woods is a hard thing to come by.
True.
I mean, take a walk through the woods, find a bear hair for me. Find a deer hair for me, for that matter. You know, it's not something you're just going to walk around and find. I mean, I think that the deer population are over a million in New York State. And I've never come across a deer. Well, I did come across a deer tail once. It fell off, and that was actually the Saratoga National Historical Park. But very rarely will you find just a lone or a bunch of deer hair. And if you do, you got to understand there's over a million plus deer in New York. Even more so, there's about 10,000 bear, and I haven't yet to see a bear. There's a lot of coyote in New York. I've yet to see a coyote in my missions. I've heard them, haven't seen them. Even deer, when we do our missions, haven't seen a deer mission. We did have one guy, however, see this huge buck during the mission with night vision, and that was about, that was 2006 as well. So when you talk about a population of Sasquatch that may only be 1,000, if that. There's no big surprise why we're not finding hair everywhere, and there's no surprise why we're not seeing them every time we're out there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, I saw on your site that you grew up with the notion that they were only in the Pacific Northwest, a lot like me, but then as you start investigating and researching and with me, it was all the TV shows and stuff. Now they think they're in 49 states. Do you think that that's possible?
Why not? They're Native Americans in 40. Well, actually, there's Native Americans that came over on the Bering Strait Bridge in 49 states. In Canada. I mean, you think about it. Were there Native American tribes in Rhode Island? Yeah. Were there Native American tribes in Connecticut? Yeah. Florida, yes. California, yes. Arizona, New Mexico, yes. Texas, yes. Louisiana, even so. The north part of the country is Washington, the Dakotas, Montana, yes. They're all Native Americans there. So is it possible for Sasquatch to be in 49 of the 50 states? Absolutely. Because if each one of the 49 states, the 49 continental states, there is enough landmass in enough hiding spots, something could hide in there very much. You know, it may be an oddity to have a sighting in Rhode Island, or it may be an oddity more so in New Jersey, because New Jersey, I'm not worried about Rhode Island so much, even though it's the smallest state. I'm worried more about, like, Rhode Island or Delaware, which have very high population-dense states. But yet they each have their own vast amount of acreages where there's nothing. So, you know, that's all got to figure in. You look at New York, which has, you know, the Adirondack State Park, 6 million acres. You have, you know, plus you're talking about, you know, wilds that aren't part of the Adirondack Park. I mean, there is state lands, you know, in the southern tier. There's state land in the western tier. That, you know, there's a huge wildlife refuge out in the western part of New York. And then you go look at Pennsylvania, the Allegheny Forest. That's just huge. You go west to Ohio, and then you have that whole, you know, the southern Ohio and the Ohio River areas that are just so, you know, wilderness. And then you have southwestern Pennsylvania, you know, a.k.a. Pennsylvania. it's just vast, vast areas. So I don't have any worry about them being out there. You know, sometimes you hear stories about Sasquatch in Arizona and in the desert and New Mexico and in the desert, but you know, there's other wild animals that survive out there as well. And when you're smarter than a primate, you find the one.
Mountains and forests in Arizona.
Yep. Well, I've been up in the Lucachugai Mountains and the Chisca Mountains of, you know, Arizona. And, you know, there's areas in Arizona as well as in Mexico that they have snow in and they have trees in and they have lakes in. And they're there. They're just not, you know, as densely cover the area as like New York or Pennsylvania or Ohio. So, you know, I feel that, you know, I feel comfortable with that. And it's kind of funny, there have been at least a couple of Bigfoot reports in Hawaii, but none of them have ever panned out. And I don't believe there's a Hawaiian Bigfoot group. And I can understand why, because it wasn't part of the expansion of, you know, of the land bridge. But it's kind of funny how they tracked that some Hawaiians many, many, many years ago landed on the west coast of South America. And I find that pretty amazing.
Do you think that they'd be going extinct then because of somewhat of the isolation and low numbers to be that spread out? I mean, do you think they're on their way out, or do you think they could be thriving?
Well, by the sighting report, they seem to be thriving. You know, because I know when I got into this 15 years ago, it seems to me that the number of sighting reports, you know, doubled, if not tripled. I mean, 15 years ago, I'd be lucky if I get a couple of good reports a year. You know, now I get about 5 or 6 stories, 7 stories a year from around the country, plus ones I track down locally of about 5 or 6. So that's nearly triple of what I was getting just, you know, 15 years ago. And you know, I can go online at any day and find a sighting report in my area that necessarily has been reported to me. You know, and if you look at the BFRO feed, they're always clicking, bang, 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 and they're clicking more. Because as many people want to not fighting Bigfoot, and yes, it has created some people with some far-out theories and has created some new amateurs in there, okay, we can deal with them. But what it has done, the number one thing it has done is produced awareness, and then if you see one of these things, maybe you're not crazy. And maybe you'll actually report it to somebody that will investigate it. So how is that a bad thing? You know, it's kind of like ghost hunters. Nobody really talked about ghosts too much. And ghost hunters came out in 2000 or 2001, somewhere in there. And look at it now. I mean, you know, paranormal activity is kind of an accepted thing now. You know, I've seen a story run, and, you know, I do run a paranormal group. I'm a co-founder of a paranormal group, and I don't talk much about it because, you know, I don't want people to get the misnomer or the misnomer that I think that these two mysteries are one and the same. They are not. They are two separate mysteries. You know, Bigfoot is flesh and blood. It's not a cloaker. It's not a wormholer. It's not a time traveler. It's not paranormal. It's not superhuman. It is a flesh and blood primate. And I want to make that clear. My experience for the paranormal, my stuff on the paranormal side, my love is investigating mystery. I love mysteries. I love trying to solve things. And the paranormal stuff is kind of fun to me. A lot more serious than Bigfoot, believe it or not. It's a lot more dangerous, I think, than even the Bigfoot mystery, because I've seen people get attachments, and I've seen people have some really strange things happen to them. And I don't want to get into that necessarily, but they are two separate individual things. But, you know, what ghost hunters did for the paranormal was it kind of brought it up in mainstream and more accepted. And finding Bigfoot is kind of doing that, not on a grand scale that ghost hunters did, because ghost hunters had that big sci-fi network where, you know, Animal Planet's kind of still a little guy on the block. But they're bringing up that awareness, and that can only help us. And, yes, is it silly at times? Absolutely. Is it necessarily how we would do research? Absolutely not. But you've got to also remember, and I've seen this, where because I was present from when they did the Mother Bigfoot episode, which was on the Vermont Trail Cam photo. You know, I was there. I was there when they were taping. And I remember them wanting to do more, but the director's like, hey, guys, come on, we got to go. We're on a time schedule. And so they get whisked away. Because it's not necessarily, when you do a TV show, it's not necessarily about doing the investigation. It's about doing the best you can do with the time you're given before they whisk you away because they have a budget. You know, when you have a crew of 25 people because it's a big show now, and you have two trucks full of equipment because it's a big show now, and that's a lot of dollars per hour. So, you know, that's the gist of it.
Yeah, I was wondering how that paranormal thing was going. You guys got
it's
a website and stuff for that?
Yep, I do. It's StreamParanormalTeam.com.
Okay.
My girlfriend, Stacy, is the actual founder of it. I let her run it. I am the co-founder, the assistant director, and the demonologist on the team. And very fun stuff. We're going to have some analysis come out. We did, like over the summertime, we do that stuff. In the wintertime, we do it a lot, too, because the extreme temperatures, we kind of cape out of the forest. I try to do my research, my field time, spring and fall. And I try to do the paranormal stuff, you know, summer and winter, unless there's an emergency case or a private client case, in which case we have to go when we have to go. Because our whole thing, when we do our paranormal work, it's not necessarily about finding evidence or finding the glory. It's actually, our paranormal work is, you know, we like doing the interesting things. We did, you know, Stacey and I did the Lizzie Borden house for a little bit. We just did a brief visit, wanted to do an overview. We happened to catch an EVP while we were taking the tour. Of course, the tour guide let us hang back about 5 minutes behind the group so we could do little things like that, and much thanks to them. And we also did Salem, and we actually...
Oh, did we lose him? Is anyone there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. Well,
yep, I'm here.
We lost him.
Oh.
But until we get him back, we can just mention that next week we're going to have the artist Dread Fun on the show, and we will be doing a drawing for a pound of the delicious Sasquatch coffee. So please join us for that. Dread is awesome.
Oh, I'm thinking Steve might have fell into a portal. It could have happened.
Let's see. I think.
Now, isn't that strange? I start talking about the paranormal. I get disconnected. So
yeah.
I go to hit redial, and it tells me my phone is in airplane mode. And I haven't touched my phone. It's sitting next. You see, these are little weird things when you start talking paranormal. That's exactly what makes you scratch your head. There's just no reason why my phone would be in airplane mode. I'm talking in my Bluetooth. Weird. But like I said, we did the place where they hung the witches, and we got a few interesting EVPs out of that. We got an apparition or some kind of light type of manifestation. Something turned off my digital recorder while we were in the middle of a session, and we caught that all on video. So it was really interesting stuff. So I've seen some interesting stuff. And when I was with another paranormal group for a few years, and I've seen stuff down at the Shanley Hotel, which is in Neponak, New York, which has been featured on Ghost Hunters. I've actually went in there and did some research and investigation. And when we were doing an EVP session, there was we basically had the whole floor to ourselves. The chair in the room across from us actually moved. We could hear it move. We asked you to do it again, and it moved again. So it's been some really, I've seen a chair move on its own when we got something mad. It's really interesting stuff. But,
wow.
You know, I find fascinating. But the goal of you know, we call ourselves the Extreme Paranormal Encounter Response Team. Our goal is to help people. Somebody's got a problem. It doesn't matter how nasty it is. The group we belong to before, and I'm not knocking them, that's what they do, is that if something was nasty, they generally kept out of it, or they couldn't do it. Us, we will go right to the end with our clients to make sure that they're safe and they're good and that their problem, if there is a problem, has been taken care of. Or if people want to know answers as to what's going on, or why it's going on, we will find that out too. And, you know, I'll tell you, in one case, and we're going to be putting that up on the website soon, on one case we had gotten called out, and she thought she had been having a lot of activity on the side of her bed by somebody walking back and forth and blah, 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 and things, you know, vibrating the bed or whatever. Well, we did an EVP, EMF sweep, which is electromagnetic frequency sweep, and sometimes, you know, there's two theories that EMF can, you know, ghosts can feed off of, and number two, if high EMF areas can also cause stuff like infrasound, where it almost causes you to hallucinate, make you feel, you know, unease and nausea and all these other side effects. Well, when we were doing EMF sweep, she had a typewriter plugged in next to her bed on a desk, and I've seen electrical panels throw off less EMF than this thing. So we asked her to remove it. You know, at the end of our investigation, we recommended that she unplug the typewriter and put it somewhere else. And she did, and lo and behold, the activity ceased. So that's what we're about. You know, we termed it as, okay, it wasn't really paranormal at all. It was probably just high EMF. So, that, I mean, you know, that's kind of cool when you can solve somebody's problem and, you know, paranormal or not. And it's the same thing with Bigfoot research. You know, the reason why I became a hoaxbuster wasn't necessarily on purpose. There's also been a few cases where I've labeled things as misidentifications. In 2007, in LaSalle Falls, Wisconsin, there was a guy by the name of Jim Rosick who had taken, his girlfriend had taken this photo of him standing by this kind of rough water, and in the background it looked like a Sasquatch. He had posted it up, and people were saying, oh, you photoshopped it, oh, you did this, you did that. Well, I had one of my guys out in Wisconsin, and he's one of my investigators day-to-day. He reached out to him, and then he put me in contact with him. The guy sent me a scan of the negatives, and the scan of the negatives, there the item was. Well, David went out there, took some pictures of the exact GPS coordinates, which the guy sent him to, and it turned out it was rocked. So we debunked that as just being a rock formation. To me,
rock squatch.
You know, it was a rock squatch. And, you know, he never said it was a squatch. He said, I didn't see nothing, hear nothing, feel nothing, smell nothing, and nothing. It was just on the picture. I put it up as a curiosity, and that's that. But we solved it. And when we gave him the results, he was so happy. And you know, it's not about proving something's a Sasquatch or not. To me, it's about proving what it is or isn't. You know, so when I get, you know, like the Vermont Trail Cam photo, if the doctor had told me that, Steve, this is something in front of the camera, you see how the shadow is bigger and blah, that would have been fine, but I knew him looking at the picture, and I talked to the scientist, and he sent me the report that hey, this is something on the ground, see the reason he had a shadow. Well, I can't argue that. He's a scientist. But yet we have people, even in the Bigfoot community, that are skeptics that are saying, well, they want to argue with the scientists. Well, why? Because you're the first ones to say you shouldn't argue with scientists. You know, so there's an hypocrisy there in some parts. You know, or the scientist isn't good enough. Well, I don't know. As far as I know, he pointed out an optics law called the parallax view. As far as I know, the parallax view is pretty consistent in concept.
Yeah, nowadays stump squatches are the big thing.
Well,
they're all the rage.
They've been pretty popular for a while. It's just that, you know, you know, the dark leaf squatches just aren't cutting it anymore, so now we got to find stumps.
And I guess now people are getting away from using red pens to circular squatches. They're going to yellow and green, so that makes it more valid.
Well, especially if you use an arrow.
yes. Well, most
or a semicircle, but not a full circle. it got to be where when I first started SquatSpectrum.com, which I can't believe that's already been 8 years. going on 9 years this January. When I started it, you know, I was doing a lot of photo analysis and video analysis. Now there's just too many of them. So now I just very selectively pick and choose. But let me just say something that I think that 99.9% of that stuff out there is crap. The reason why is the minute I approach them, they, that's okay. We appreciate you trying to analyze our video, but okay. That's just my reputation. They don't want to put that up against the test. They don't want to answer the tough questions. And as much as I try to teach people, unfortunately, the people that people have learned the most from, I think, has been Facebook Find Bigfoot. You know, that old debacle. Because they didn't do anything right. And I'm not, you know, they're nice enough guys, but they have no clue how to investigate anything. They want to take a film on the merits of the film. Well, okay, this is a nice film. What happened before that? What happened after that? Why is it this only film of this one particular incident? You know, usually when you film, like when the Patterson-Gimlin film, had a lot of film of many other things on that reel.
Confirms on all points.
You know, there was film before, there was film after, when they were doing the plaster cast. You know, with these films, oh, it's just like a 10-second video, and that's all it took. What?
So,
you know, so and a film is only as good as the story behind it. The same thing with a picture. Yep. Picture's only as good as the story behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if they're not willing to talk about it, they're not willing to tell me, hey, what happened before, they're not willing to show me the entire clip or the other clips during the day to confirm that they were actually there and actually doing something, then guess what? You're full of crap. Crap, I tell you.
Well, we're coming down to our last 5 minutes. I was just wondering, what's up with your radio show, Steve? Is that coming back? And what do you got planned for the future here?
Oh, we're absolutely coming back. Like I said, we need a little hiatus. Chris and I, like, you know, I haven't talked to Chris in about a month. I got to give him a jingle. We're busy. I mean, Chris runs a business. I'm working 60 hours a week now. But on the same token, every once in a while we need a break. And things start to get stale. And, you know, the last time we were having radio issues, we were having problems with the issue of getting a consistent signal. I'm back in my area where I was doing my show, and I had the same service provider I was doing my show when we had strong signal. We had the misfortune of going on a couple of networks that were giving us bad time slots or, you know, let's face it, I don't think 11 o'clock at night was a good time for Squawk Detective Radio. You know, and I didn't appreciate that if we had an emergency or we couldn't broadcast for a couple of weeks, that the owners of the station got mad with us because we weren't getting a paycheck from that show. I mean, Blog Talk was paying us more for that show than they were. And there were some things where there was some not communication done. So that kind of shut our season before that kind of short. And then we went into another season. And then once I made the move in the Internet and we tried to do a show a couple of weeks in a row where we kept losing our signal and losing stuff because of my service provider for Internet, we had nothing better to do but say, okay, we're going to cease the show. We'll be back. And we were working on a system to work a better system, per se. And as it turned out, that here I'm back in my area, so now the show has unlimited potential. I just want to make sure that we're all comfortable in our routines before we hop into committing to a weekly show. And there may be some other options that we're looking at. We're looking at maybe perhaps doing a podcast where we're doing video and some video, not just radio. So, or we may go back to Blog Talk again. We have to discuss that. But I would say that Squawk Detective Radio is probably going to be back within the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Sweet. Look forward to it.
Thank you, sir. But I want to thank you guys for having me on. It's been fun. And, you know, I'm a total windbag today now because I just got back from an expedition, and I usually get kind of excited after that. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But
that's what it's all about.
I'm very happy to be sleeping in a mosquito-free environment tonight, so...
How has it been cooling off? You still got skeeters out there?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, the funny thing is last night I had a couple of people bag out. You know, it was supposed to be, you know, the weather report, 100% chance. Went from 40% chance of rain to 100% chance of rain. We got there, it rained for 10 minutes, and that was it. So we were wonderful last night. And everybody thought we were going to get rained out. And everybody was saying, well, you know, you're supposed to get rain. You might want to pull your people out of there. If that area floods, we're fine. And we were.
Nice. That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, thank you for joining us, man. It's always good to catch up on what you got going on, and I look forward to all the great things to come.
Absolutely. Well, like I said, we always try to keep it real, and we always try to keep it fun, and if it's not fun, then it's not worth it. So I love what I do, and I got to have fun with what I do. Otherwise, I just won't do it. And remember, there's other things, too, that I'd like to remind everybody out there, especially those who are Bigfoot researchers, what other place can you make friends across the country? Just remember that.
Very true.
So, all right,
Squawk
guys.
Detective.
Thank you very much. Have a
great
night, guys.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And we'll be back next week with Dread Fun. He's a cryptid artist. He does all sorts of sweet stuff. And he's a Bigfoot enthusiast. I guess he's researched a lot, has a lot of information as well. And we'll be giving away a pound of Sasquatch coffee. So we'll see you next week for another episode of Monster X Radio.